This week's segment of Sports Lit 101, and Bruce, a book that you talked a little bit about last week, but sounds like a terrific read.
Yeah, you are going to really like this. The book is called Spirals, and the subtitle is The Family's Education in Football. Well, this is a family with if not a unique, a very uncommon relationship to football. And the writer, Timothy Spears, Timothy B. Spears, is an American civilization professor at Middlebury College, and he brings the scholar's honesty and inquiry to this without bringing the scholar's academic language, which is, makes it an incredibly readable book. And it begins with him describing the reaction. His mother passed away, and his father was sliding into dementia. And one of the things he had done, his father was the captain of the 1951 Yale football team. And he had been in touch, the author had been, with some of his father's friends and like. And he really wanted to know more about his father, but more, particularly more about his grandfather, who was the legendary Doc Spears. Now, Doc Spears was a guard at Dartmouth. He was the head football coach at Minnesota, Oregon, Wisconsin, Maryland, I'm forgetting one, Dartmouth, and another, but West Virginia. And he was also a physician, a practicing physician, and a head football coach. And he was in the era with Newt Rockne, with whom he knew and with whom he played with the famous Canton Bulldogs with Jim Thorpe. So his great-grandfather was one of the seminal figures in college football. He discovered Bronco Nagurski, who was out plowing in a field without a horse or a tractor, just pushing the plow through the Minnesota prairie. and Doc Spears said, this boy ought to play football.
Wow.
So that means, and so his... He's somebody I've read a lot about, but never a book about him. Always the mention about Doc Spears. And Doc Spears apparently was not always the easiest guy to get along with. He quarreled with a lot of administrations because he wanted to maintain his medical practice while he was also the head football coach. Didn't always see eye to eye with faculty different places, but had sort of skated through life as one of these legendary guys. So here we have Timothy, who was the third in the line. Now, his father, who went to Yale, went on to be an executive with Republic Steel out of Cleveland, and that's where Spears grew up. There was a time when his father was transferred to Chicago, but he came back, and that was his lifelong job, was he worked for Republic Steel. Spears would say he was a middle-of-the-road Republican, not overly conservative, not overly progressive, but he was, you know, the kind of Republicans we knew back in our youth. And his son, though, also goes to Yale, the author. And he goes to Yale, and he becomes captain of the football team, too. But he has a very different experience at Yale in that he is from a different generation. Now, his father was a captain in 51, so that's the year I was born. So Spears and I sort of grew up at the same time. I'm a little older than he is. So he goes back and tries to learn all he can learn about his father's playing days and about his grandfather, and then looks at it through the lens of his own experience of both having gone to a highly regarded prep school, day school in Cleveland, and gone on to play at Yale, and then becoming an academic. You know, he gets his PhD and becomes a college professor. Now, for those people that don't know, he teaches at Middlebury College, which by every measure is one of the 10 or 12 most highly regarded liberal arts colleges in North America. It's, you know, a highly selective place, and it has excellent Division III sports. So he's seeing, you know, all the time, he's seeing football games at Youngman Stadium with on a beautiful fall day with a couple of thousand people there or whatever. But he's locked into this notion that how did football make him who he is, his dad who he was, his grandfather who he was, and what are the differences? He also is... In the very end of the book, he engages the book that we, friend of downtown, Steve Allman, wrote, Against Football, and looks back at some of the things his grandfather said as a physician about football. This is not a screed. There's no time where this is whining or preaching or anything. It's just a fascinating book as one man looks back to see how he got to where he did. But his looking back looks over things most of us don't see. You know, you know, I don't have a Doc Spears in my football lineage, right? What he discovered along the way is, and I don't want to tip too much of it off because I'm really hoping we'll have him on, what he discovers along the way is that there's a lot going on in this world. And I really thought that Michael Oriard, who is considered sort of the dean of sport literature in America, he started the Sport Literature Association. He wrote The Art of Football. He said this, and I thought this was really good. With a grandfather who coached Bronco Nagurski, a father who captained his Yale team, Timothy Spears was destined to play football at Yale too. In a puzzling out of the meaning of that family legacy, and that's the thing, puzzling out what it really means, and of the game at its center, Spirals is full of hard-won wisdom and an enthralling read. And it is the hard-won wisdom. I mean, Army tried to get this guy, you know, nah, come on, you want to go to West Point, you want to be a real man, you don't want to go to Yale and be one of those guys, right? And because people may not remember, up until the 60s, Ivy League football was really good.
You right.
Know, when they really started to de-emphasize it in the 1960s, and it was starting to happen when Spears in the 60s and 70s, until I think it was only 10 years ago that Michigan surpassed Yale with the most victories in college football and the most All-Americans, one of the two. It was something like that. So, you know, certainly when I was younger, UConn was not the better football team. And well, they may not be now either. You know, it was Yale and Harvard was, and Harvard and Holy Cross were big time players. They played, you know, the service academies and the big schools. So it's not looking at an Ivy League education alone. It's looking at the culture of sport and the way that different males understand the lessons, but it's a fabulous, fabulous book. My son gave it to me for Christmas, and I looked at it, and I started to read it, and literally I read it in two sessions. I went back and read many of the other sections of it because it's it really ties us through the whole history of college football. You know, I mean, his grandfather talked strategy with Newt Rockne. They coached against one another. And now he teaches American civilization. And the other reason I'm really interested is my son was a history major. He tried twice. He wanted to take classes from him, but it didn't, the semester and arrangement didn't work out. But he said at Middlebury, he says, everybody loved, they wanted, his was the class people wanted to take. So I'm sure that he'll be a good guest. We'll get him on at some point.
That sounds great. Awesome. And next week, looking forward to hearing more about this book we were chatting about a little bit before we went on the air.
This is a great, these two are two of the best books, and we've had a lot of good books recently. Yeah, When the Crowd Didn't Roar, How Baseball's Strangest Game Ever Gave a Broken City Hope, in April 29th, 2015, after the murder of Freddie Gray and Baltimore erupts into riots, some of the strangest things happen, and one of them is a baseball game, a Major League Baseball game, for the first time in the history of Major League Baseball, which goes back to 1833, a game was played in front of no fans. No fans, zero attendance. And when you see how the ball players handle it, the city handles it, the controversies either way, it's great. It's written by a guy named Kevin Cowherd, who's written four books with Cal Ripken for young kids. But he's a 30-plus-year journalist in Baltimore. And I know Jack Gildon from Collision of Wills has said some things about this. And Gary Thorne, friend of the show and longtime friend of yours, called the game, and he and Jim Palmer and the things they did play a big role. You're going to really like these books.
Excellent. Looking forward to it, and much more ahead. Every Wednesday, we talk sports literature, and we were chatting about this, too. How many years you've been doing this, Bruce, with us? Is it four now?
I think it's five.
Five, wow. And I thought that was a great idea when you pitched it and we started doing it, but this thing has grown to the point where now you know, you're getting so many books and so many different publishers reaching out to share books because they appreciate the exposure, but also appreciate the fact that one or often both of us actually reads the book.
Right, and then the other thing I think is fascinating is the books that you get sent, independent of the books that I get sent. I mean, I think you got the Amy Bass book, One Goal, before I
yes,
saw it.
Yeah.
And The League before I saw it. You know what I mean? So people out there in the sport literature world are listening, and I'll tell you, they're sharing these segments with other people. So it's really fun. It's work, but it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Bruce.
My pleasure, sir.